Hi, everyone. Welcome to Potluck Food Talks. Today, we're going to talk about food travel. What's your approach on food travel? How do you plan a trip? For example, you get a ticket today and you have to go for a week to Korea. What do you do? How do you plan the whole thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do put a fair amount of research into it, right? So I don't just go and hope for the best, which I also think is totally fine, right? But what I enjoy the most when I go somewhere is I want to get out of the tourist areas straight away. One of my biggest focuses when I am visiting somewhere is obviously the food, right? I want to go where the locals eat, and I want to kind of dissolve into the environment and basically be unnoticeable, right? Like I am part of the scenery. Like, yeah. I just want to be one of the locals, right? As much as that's possible, right? That's like not always possible, obviously, especially when you're in Korea. When I'm in Brussels, it's a little bit easier.
I love this statement of Anthony Bourdain where he says, don't be a tourist, be a traveler.
Yes.
Right? Like, I guess that implies like respect for the local culture and not behaving like a dick or behaving like you own the place. I recently saw this video of, so embarrassing, like a woman chasing a geisha in Kyoto to make a picture of her, standing in front of her with a camera and harassing her to make a picture as if it was a fucking safari, you know?
Yeah.
I think that those kind of tourists should be deported immediately, you know, like go back to your fucking country, you know?
Shot on sight.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Executed.
We put out a flyer and it's a manhunt. You know, you see this person, it's free for all. The purge is real. But I totally agree with you. There's this very strange, I guess it's like inherent racism in a way, where people have a disassociation of the human aspect of people when they're going to other countries. It's maybe a lack of education, as in like education and sort of like a multicultural education, you know? If you're like stuck in your community and then suddenly you go out and it's a very like, especially when there's like a very obvious, you know, difference in appearance and culture, right? That people don't really value that as much as they would when facing something familiar. That's how I always kind of felt about that. When I see that, you see it often, especially Americans when going to Europe, you know, it often feels like they come. And they're like, they're incredibly loud. They own the place. Yeah. They're incredibly loud. They talk like they feel like nobody can understand them anyway, right? Where we're sort of like, everybody here speaks fucking English, you know, because we have a functioning school system. It's like the stereotype that I've seen proven right many, many times. Also with the British. I grew up in the Canary Islands, right? The British would come to the Canary Islands and be disastrous. My image of British people as a child was horrendous, right? Because I would only see the like thick neck, overweight, kind of like St. George flag tattoo on their arm, like 10 o'clock in the morning, already had 3 pints, and just kind of like walk up to the locals, be like, hey, where's the club, you know? And get into fights all the fucking time. Like, they were horrible, you know, just like urinating on the street, being super rude to everybody because they know that it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter how much they embarrass themselves. It doesn't matter how rude they are. In a couple of days, they're going to be gone forever. And nobody's going to see them again. And it's very problematic.
Going back to the travel topic, like, I, same as you, like... For example, I'm planning a trip now to Japan. And for me, that's a very special trip because I'm traveling just to eat, to learn, to generate content. So I'm actually planning this truly. I first made like a checklist of traditional Japanese things that I love and that I've tasted, and many of them cooked myself for my whole life. This is my first time going to Japan. So it's the first time I'm going to try the original thing, the real thing, after having tried copies all my life, which is an interesting process in itself. I experienced that in Israel when I tried like a hummus and a Lebanese restaurant. And it was like, okay, I was getting the wrong copy all of my life, and suddenly this is the real thing, and this has nothing to do with the hummus you find in the West or in supermarkets or the one you do at home with the chickpeas that you find in the West. It's like a different thing, starting with the chickpeas that are different. And I guess like I will get many of those, even though I've been to really Japanese restaurants with Japanese chefs. So I guess I have had like a grasp of the real thing, but not the real thing. And for me, that's very, very exciting. So I've also been planning like a lot of places to go. Also, by the way, I'll be recording and traveling with a co-traveler, Bernie from Canada, and I'll be recording episodes on the way, like on the places we go, what we eat, what we try, what we think about, and these kind of things. So there's episodes on that coming, because Japan is like a very different country from any other, I guess. Also, like maybe is the number one foodie destination in the world, maybe.
One of them for sure, yeah.
And for that reason, I didn't know, but my friend Barry, who lives there, he told me, in advance, so we start making the bookings. And he told me this like 6 months in advance. And I left everything for the last minute, as I always do. So I was planning my bookings like 1.5 months in advance. Many of the places, it's impossible. Everything was booked until February. Like 6 months is a good time frame to do your bookings in many places, especially the very good ones. I never saw so crazy booking policies and cancellation policies as I've seen in Japan. I did a mistake and I booked for a place that I booked wrongly. I have to pay full price and I won't be able to visit it. If I cancel it, I have to pay anyway. If I cancel 1 month in advance, I have to pay anyway. If I do a change, like an allergy change of whatever, I have to pay double price. And I think, for me, that's like too much. You know, like for me, that's things that are non-rationally strict, for me is like way too much. You know, like not being able to cancel and get my money back 45 days in advance, for me, that's, you're a little bit too crazy, you know?
It's very strict. I mean, yeah, Japan can be a very strict country in certain regards. Yeah, don't wear any perfume, you know, blah, 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 et cetera. No alterations to the menu. Like a lot of the Michelin star places will say, like, not even Michelin star places, just general, you know, like focused places. There will be sort of like, if you have like preferences for your diet and allergies, etc., we recommend you to go somewhere else because we don't make any alterations to our food.
Yeah, I saw that in Cezanne, man, because I tried to book that Cezanne, two Michelin star place.
Three.
Yeah, like you told me to go there, and a lot of people have told me that Japan is a very interesting place to try Italian and French food. Which is not my interest at all. Like I mean, not in my first trip. I want to go like just 100% pure Japanese from Japan. I'm going to MAS, which is a Peruvian restaurant, well, modern Peruvian. Maybe Peruvian is not I mean it's Peruvian, but I would say it's more like land and place kind of focus. Like they focus on the territory. I know the chef. I'll interview him. There's an episode on that coming as well. And I'll have a dinner there. I had like a super nice experience in Central. This is a restaurant associated to Central. And Santiago, who is the chef, he's the first and only Venezuelan to have 2 Michelin stars. And me being from Venezuela, I think it's an interesting topic to interview him. That's the only booking I made that is non-Japanese. Everything else is because there's so much and there are so many subgenres of Japanese food. You have like tempuras, you have yakitoris, kaisekis, shojin, oden, sushi, of course, wagyu, you know, like so many different things that I want to catch them all, like with Pokemons, you know?
I would say, though, that you have to... At least there's some things that you have to do because it is sort of like on the outside, it's not pure Japanese, but it is actually pure Japanese. Like, for example, you have to go eat a pizza. You have to go to a place like Studio Tamaki and eat like a marinara pizza. You just have to, you know, for me, it's like going to like a good sushi place. They have to, because I'm actually also planning a trip to Japan in like next year. like middle of next year, which is also the first time for me going back in 10 years. And I'm super excited for you, by the way, because for me, my trip to Japan was really life-changing. So I'm really excited to hear what you say. I was talking to the person I'm kind of planning to go with, and I'm sort of like, we're doing exactly what you're saying. So I'm like, okay, what are the must-dos, right? And it's kind of like not ending, because you start, you're like, okay, well, we have to have sushi. It's no question. We have to have good sushi.
It's fucking then, no ending. It's incredible. Yeah.
We have to have yakitori, and then you go on. Okay, well, you have to have ramen. You have to have soba. You have to have, well, it would be nice to go to a udon place, but then you have to go to a yakiniku place, really, because he has to do yakiniku.
It's not ending. And then any of these, you have 150 options that are all incredibly
that
great.
Are all top,
you know,
top
like,
level. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, exactly. All top of the top. Like, I don't know. Like, I couldn't believe that there are yakitori places for 200 euros, the omakase menu. And I'm like, really?
Yeah, but
like,
this is the thing. Know, like, this is something that was life-changing for me, because I was like, I was very young when I went, and I just like you, I already knew a lot about Japanese food, which is really cool to go to Japan and already have this like knowledge that you can apply. You know what things are, you know, and you know why tempura is great, for example, why tempura isn't just a frito misto, right? But like for me, for example, I had this exact thing. I went to a yakitori place, and like and I was looking forward to it, and I was excited, but my mind was fucking blown. It was so good. And it really made me not just like question ingredients and blah. It just made me question like the momentum of food and the preparation itself, with it being grilled to the certain point. It gets placed in front of you. You take it, you eat it straight away. It's a completely different impact, completely different. And then before I left, right, a few days before I left, my head chef at the time, he asked me, so like, what's your favorite tempura place? And I was like, I didn't really get the time in my time here to go eat tempura. And he was like, that's super unacceptable. Like, because I was like, but you know, I was more focused on going to like kaiseki places and sushi places and yakitori places. And I ate a lot of ramen and all that sort of street food stuff. And he was like, no, you cannot leave Japan without having eaten real tempura. Because for me, tempura, like, it's very nice, but it wasn't like exciting, right? And he took me to a tempura place. It has one Michelin star. It's called Mikawa. It has two places in Tokyo. And it completely blew my fucking mind. It was insane. Like, I did not know that tempura could be like that. The execution, the produce, the point of cooking, well, fried. Just crazy. And you can talk about it, but this perfection and simplicity, you have to experience it.
That's so exciting, man. Well, what I do when I travel, I mean, Japan is a very specific and special destination, but usually what I always do is that I go to different guides, different sources. Especially the best source is always the recommendations from people, locals or people that have traveled there that know how to eat. And then when I have like this list of places, I pin them on Google Maps. So I have already my Google map with all these dots where I know. So because there will be times that you're in the middle of whatever and you need to find a place at hand that it's near just to have lunch, you know, because it's not that you're going to have bookings for the three meals of the day for the whole trip. You also have to have some flexibility, yes. Right? And then at some point, you're just looking on Google Maps, and it's good to have already like your places. Okay, look, there is something near here that I already looked for, because I think something that is really like sad and a waste of everything is having a bad meal in a trip if you're in a nice food destination.
And it's so easy to happen. It's so easy to happen, yeah.
Exactly. That happened to me when I was in Bolzano and Südtirol, this Austrian, Germanic, Italy. I mean, this place, I think it was listed in the Michelin Guide or something. And I went there, and for me, it was like, meh. Yeah. You know, not exciting. And not bad, not bad. But not like, you know, when you're looking for this regional cuisine, something that you can't find anywhere else, and it's super different and exciting and tasty, and I didn't find any of that because I didn't have a recommendation from a local. So, and then there's something that I started doing recently, because also for the main reason is because I became a food tour guide, but I'm starting to take food tours when I travel. Because it's also like, I wouldn't do that because I was with the mentality of, I'll just find the places and go. But now, first of all, also to learn from others, it's always good if you have like an activity or a profession to see how others do it. But also I find the value in it. Like for example, if someone goes to San Sebastian, I'll save them a lot of time. You know, like you can eat all the places and then decide which are the best ones. I'll take you directly to the best ones. You know, you can book on potluckfoodtours.com.
Do it.
If you're coming to San Sebastian, just book a tour with me.
It totally makes sense, you know, like, and I would consider doing the same thing if, like, if I would go to Japan, you know, and I had somebody, well, I'll call myself like, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. It saves you a lot of time, probably money also. Well, I mean, you spent the money on the tour, right? But like so much effort, and you know, you can have the ease of mind that, you know, because you can have really shit food in San Sebastian also, right? Like you can go to the Parte Vieja and have things that are, well, not shit, but like underwhelming. If you go to the wrong place, you get the wrong stuff and you're like, well, this is, I mean, fine, but.
Well, what I always say, and I really believe so, is that in San Sebastian, everything will be at least good. Like, it's very hard that you find something that is bad.
I've had things that were a little bit.
I mean, for me, like, especially in part, I mean, of, yes, there are, but I mean, you have to do something really wrong. You know, like if you're going to like a very suspicious, for example, I went to a new Mexican place that opened and I was like, that was not okay. First of all, Mexican place in Old Town. Second, recently opened, like two red flags, you know, like. I was hungry, man. What can I say? Talking about Mexicans, and I wanted to bring this out.
Oh, no.
Like, dude, like that thing we had in Copenhagen was shit.
Oh, yeah.
Those tacos we had, man.
Yeah, really disappointing. Yeah.
We were at this market. This was one of the Hija de Sanchez places. And the guy, we were filming like the cooking, and the guy were, there's no filming allowed. And I have my image rights and I don't want to appear on camera. Something like that. And we're like, okay, take it easy. Then we had like three tacos for 60 euros. And I mean, okay, yeah, it's Copenhagen and those are the prices there. But I find it to be unacceptable that this place is opened by such a respected chef, and that I have in a super simple taco place in Eguía in San Sebastian, which is like a non-pretentious place at all, things way better for way less money. For me, that's just crap. Like for me, that was one of the down, I would say maybe the worst dish we had in Copenhagen was that one.
I would agree. It was by far for me the worst thing that we ate on the Copenhagen trip. Like even, it's very harsh to say, but even like the like 7-Eleven hot dogs late at night were better because of the experience and stuff, you know. The service was super shit. Also, the tacos, they were very underwhelming. It wasn't like we expected something amazing and we got something that's just good. It was very substandard. And I guess that's the difficulty when you, you know, branch out and you do like food markets and stuff, like holding the quality. But that's just the important thing that you have to do.
And I get, and also this guy, you know, confronting us because we were filming. It was like, it's not that like we were like with TV equipment.
It's totally fine. It's totally fine that he says that he doesn't want to be filmed. It's just the way that he did it, right? Like we were actively filming him, right? You know, he was making the point, yeah, it's not allowed to film in the market. And we were sort of like, well, okay. He was like, there's signs everywhere. And we were sort of like, well, we definitely did not see the signs. And I mean, afterwards we looked around, right? And we didn't see any signs.
Exactly. There were no signs. This guy didn't want it to be filmed and he made like a whole drama about it.
I've been in the same situation, you know. I've also had people come to the kitchen and start filming me. And I said, excuse me, but if you're going to start filming me, it would be nice if you at least asked my permission, you know. It's I'm not an animal in a zoo, right? But it's this ways of doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like also when we went to Popple, by the way, in the veganism episode, we didn't mention the vegan burger we had at Popple. That shit was amazing.
Yeah.
You remember it was like this pressed mushroom.
Malayan's main mushroom. Yeah. That was so good. Popple in general was just, I think for me, that was the surprise of the trip, honestly, because the burgers, they were very nice, but we expected that. Right, from the beef burger to the monkfish burger was my favorite, honestly. The monkfish burger was so nice.
Yeah, they were just very surprising. You know, like, I was expecting, you know, having like burgers with very crazy fermented sauces. That was kind of like my expectation. But then we had like this crazy monkfish thing, this crazy vegan burger, super nice.
All the small side dishes, they were just fucking nice. You could just take the side dishes, put them in any sort of wine bar in London, in Berlin, in Paris, and, you know, like, there would be a hit. Those little fjord shrimps with the rose powder and whatever, and the lemon, you know, the little, like, grilled vegetable leaves to drag through the sauce, you know, the dessert. I really loved all of it. The service was super nice. The place was beautiful and simple.
Well, and these guys came to us and they told us, well, there's no problem with you guys filming us. We'll have a contract that we can be filmed for marketing purposes. You just can't film the guests. I mean, that's perfectly logical. I also understand that if you're working like in just in a market taco place and you don't want to sign something like that and you don't want to be filmed, that's fine. Yeah. You know, like... Dude, I went yesterday to a Korean place here in Barcelona, and Korea for me is like a next thing that I want to explore way more. Korean food in general, because there are so many things that I don't know that are so amazing. There is this thing here in Barcelona or in Catalonia that is called the Association of Koreans, and they have their own, it's not like a Michelin star, but it's just like a seal. You know, like approved by the Korean Association. So like it's an authentic restaurant.
Yeah.
And I've seen it in a couple of restaurants. And I had many things. I have like this dumplings. I had fried chicken. But I would say the surprise was tteokbokki.
The little rice cakes, huh?
Yeah, these rice cakes that are called taeok. And these were like in a sauce that was kind of fish with gochujang, a little bit spicy. But for me, the crazy thing, and that was like really the surprising thing, it was gratinated with cheese.
Yeah.
And for me, cheese in Asian food is like a surprise. Like why? They also like, as a starter by the house, they sent us as a gift, a little salad, which had like, but I mean, when I say salad, I mean tomato, lettuce, and onions. With a very simple dressing, you know, like Korean vinegar and oil and salt. Yeah. That was it. And it has grated cheese on top. And I was like, okay, this was unexpected, yeah. You know? But this thing, because these rice cakes, they're like, I don't know how to describe them. These are like long gnocchis, thick udons kind of thing. Like this little, they're like the size of a thumb finger. And the texture was so fucking nice. They were like gnocchis, like so nice, man.
Yeah,
I really love
nice.
That one. Yeah, for example, Korea. Korea is a place that if I would go to Korea, I would do my list of dishes that I want to try. I would go to a map, pin the things. I would ask my Korean friends. I would like build like a whole schedule of destinations. And that's the way I would do it.
Yeah, I would also look at the neighborhoods. And get a little bit informed about what is going on in what neighborhood, just in a broad sense. Sometimes it doesn't really work. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult. But, you know, often it's very useful. Like, for example, like take the... I can think of lots of examples. You know, San Sebastian, right? You can like say, okay, there's Gross, there's Parte Vieja, blah, blah, blah. You have a little bit of an idea. Paris, right? The arrondissements. What's going on in which one, you know, because there's some that are like a little bit more in this cultural direction, that cultural direction, Berlin, Kreuzberg, blah, Prenzlauer Berg, you know, whatever. Do you go west? Do you go east? You're a little bit informed. Tokyo also, you know, Ginza, right? You know what, like what is happening in Ginza? You know what's happening in Omotesando. Like you have a little bit of a broad idea. This is a very rich area, very fancy area with high level restaurants. It's more like a neighborhood area. This is a drinking area. And that helps a lot also. And I also often, you know, I mean, like a little ritual that I have, I will try to find an old Anthony Bourdain episode about the place and I'll see what he did, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's always a good one. I have a lot of travelers that come to San Sebastian that they get tour with me. That they do that. They saw that when I bring them to some places, they're like, "Oh, Anthony Bourdain was in this place," and so on and so. Yeah. Also, something I didn't mention about tours and tour guides. They always add like a layer of context that it's very hard for you to find out yourself by yourself. You know, like, and I know that because I do that, and I guess that's what I expect. I'm having a trip to Portugal next week, and I took a food tour, you know, because I, like I said, I want to learn from other professionals that are doing the same. Like I said, like, there's always this history context that, of course, you can read it yourself, but at the end of the day, you know, like, you pay someone else to do the work for you or to make it easier for you in general. Like, of course, you can find all the restaurants, Google the restaurants, look for all the reviews, which is the best dish in each restaurant, and also to read some history, or you can save a lot of time and just let someone else do that for you.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.